Welcome back to True Crime San Antonio. I am just another San Antonio native, and thank you for tuning in. Whether you've been with us since day one or it's your first week here, we appreciate you, and welcome to the San Antonio True Crime fam. This week's story is about two young lives taken way too early, and the reason for it can only be speculated. The tragedy wouldn't end there though, as it would result in another death and multiple lives changed forever. Would you kill to defend the honor of your buddy's girl? Yeah, me neither. But first, San Antonio, True Crimes This Week. A tow truck driver who was in the process of repossessing a car shot a man several times following a confrontation outside a home on Wednesday, October the 13th, on the city's southwest side. According to the San Antonio Police Department, the 23-year-old tow truck driver was preparing to secure a vehicle around 4 p.m. in the 700 block of Fenfield Avenue when a 27-year-old man armed with a gun came out of the home and confronted the driver. The tow truck driver, who was also armed, got into argument with the man and, feeling that he was in danger, shot him. The man suffered multiple wounds to his torso and was transported to the Brook Army Medical Center in critical condition. He is expected to face a charge of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. The tow truck driver was licensed to carry his weapon and was cooperative with the officers. The investigation, though, is still ongoing. Also, an armed man, who San Antonio police described as a very violent individual and had a very violent past, barricaded himself inside a Northwest Side apartment for about 6.5 hours on Wednesday, October the 13th, before a combination of police and his own gunfire brought the standoff to a fatal end. Police Chief William McManus said the standoff began around noon when the man who was on parole for murder got into an argument with a woman and shot at her 4 times as she fled the apartment. It was in the 5900 block of Danny K. Drive on the city's Northwest Side. Chief McManus didn't know the relationship between the two. Chief McManus said the man ran back into the apartment after shooting at her and barricaded himself. Despite a team of social workers, police negotiators, mental health officers, and the man's parole officer, he refused to come out. McManus says that he was very animated about not wanting to come out. At around 6:30 p.m., the suspect started shooting at officers out of one of the apartment windows. Police returned one round, striking the man in the shoulder, according to Chief McManus. The suspect then turned the gun on himself. The officer who wounded the suspect, a 20-year veteran on the force, will be placed on administrative duty while the incident is investigated, as per protocol. Also, the Bexar County Medical Examiner's Office on Monday released the name of a teenager that was killed in a shooting on early Sunday morning, October the 17th, on the east side. The victim was identified as Anthony Vic Rodriguez, 16 years old. San Antonio police were called to the 2600 block of Tilly Drive at around 2:50 a.m. on Sunday for reports of shots fired. When police arrived, they found Rodriguez on the ground with a gunshot wound, and he was pronounced dead on the scene. Officers said a witness nearby saw a white truck drive down the road at a high rate of speed, make a U-turn, and then take off. A call came into police later from a man who said he was driving two other men when both of them got into an argument. Both of the men pulled guns on each other, and the other fatally shot Rodriguez. The driver stopped the vehicle, and the suspected shooter pulled Rodriguez out of the car and fled on foot. That's when the driver drove away and called San Antonio Police Department. No arrests have been made as of October the 20th. Also, a man has been arrested for setting his apartment on fire after a dispute with a woman on Friday night. On October the 15th, investigators say Aquiles Alarcon, 52 years old, set his apartment on fire located in the 4900 block of Woodstone Avenue on the northwest side of town. When firefighters arrived, they found a fire coming out of the bedroom, while the man waited in the back patio of the complex with a bloody arm. According to an arrest affidavit, A family violence call was made an hour before the fire was set. Alarcón threatened a woman inside the apartment with a knife and began to throw hot oil around. The woman left the apartment and was not injured. When the man was asked about the fire, he said possibly 10 intruders entered his apartment, sprayed lighter fluid in the room, and set his bed on fire. He also added that they cut off his wife's head, and her body and head were in the living room of the apartment. No evidence of a deceased woman with a missing head or any lighter fluid was in the apartment, though. The man was taken to Brooke Army Medical Center for evaluation of possible mental instability and paranoia. He is going to be charged with arson. No other injuries were reported, and his bond was set at $30,000. He's currently waiting an indictment. And lastly, I told you last week about a shooting that took the life of Sarah Silva. In an interview with KSAT 12 News, the family remembered her. She was a newly hired teacher who never finished her first week on the job at La Petite Academy. And her family wanted to share her story to raise awareness about the severity of domestic abuse. They said Sarah Silva was a fun woman to be around. She was very kind and very loving, said David Silva, her brother. She had a big heart. She loved to dance and loved music, and she would sing too. She was the only aunt to my two kids, said Angela Castillo, her sister-in-law. That is why she loved everything to do with kids. Sarah worked at daycare facilities for several years, but had a dream of becoming an official teacher. She had been only working at La Petite Academy on Sunset Road for a couple of days before the fatal shooting. The family said they had no idea of any abuse that was taking place in a relationship with Evan Aaron Held, her accused killer. They had been dating for about a year, and when I met him, I didn't have good vibes, David said. But anytime I would come visit, I never heard him yelling at her or anything. I would ask my mom if she heard anything, and she said she never heard anything. He would come over and he wasn't disrespectful or anything like that. She did say he just got out of jail, so that only made him kind of sketchy to me. In fact, Held was released from prison in the summer of 2019 with a rap sheet that goes on for days, including multiple family violence assault charges and two separate sexual assault charges to a child. I just noticed every time I was around her with him, she was a little different, Angela said. She wasn't as outgoing as she was when she was with him. Unfortunately, the day of the fatal shooting, David Silva said his mom did hear him yelling at his sister. She lived in a little back house behind her mother's home, and the family allowed Hell to live with her. I was at work when they called me, David said. I had to work the graveyard shift. They called me and I got down here. My mom said she heard him yelling, so she opened the back door and said, "Evan, I can hear you." They had their door open, and I guess that is when he got mad and said, "Why don't you go inside with your mom?" Sarah went inside, but it wasn't over. "She went to my mom's and they shut the door," he went on. Later that evening, he came looking for her. He was at the bottom of the steps yelling for her to come out. My mom said that Sarah had an ugly feeling and didn't want to come out, and my mom told her she didn't have to. I guess they didn't think anything bad was going to happen. David said that when she opened the door to peek out, she saw he had a gun. She said, "Oh my God, he has a gun," and she slammed the door. That's when Held started kicking the door from the other side. My sister got up and started holding the door closed, and he just started shooting through the door. Sarah was fatally struck by multiple bullets, and her mother was struck in the arm. They said she got hit in her heart and stomach, but I just don't know how many shots, David said. My mother got out of the hospital yesterday but had to have surgery. She had plates put in her arm because it shattered the whole bone. I believe my sister is a hero because she was holding the door to keep him out. If he would have come through, he could have shot and killed everyone in the room. David Silva said he's still in disbelief. "It's like a dream," he said. "I have been crying, my parents have been crying, but I haven't been able to let it out yet. It doesn't seem real. Tomorrow, I still feel like I'm going to wake up and come by and she's going to be here." David replaced the door, where bullet holes still remain, so that his mother doesn't have to relive such a tragic reality. "I had to clean up all the blood from the pillows and blankets and off the porch where my mother was getting her bandage for her bullet wound. It was horrifying to come in and see all of that, especially knowing that blood was my sister's. He said he wants his sister's loss to serve as a reminder to other victims of domestic violence. Love is blind sometimes, he said. You don't want to reach out for help, but if there's a woman out there being abused, they should walk out of the relationship. Don't wait. Walk away from that because you don't need that in your lives. Aaron Evan Hell did turn himself in to Dallas police after he was wanted for murder and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. I can never forgive this guy, David said. I hope I can be there in court to let him know how I feel about him. Ask him why he did it. What were your intentions? Why didn't you get up and leave? The family is raising funds to help for funeral expenses. They plan on holding a plate sale on Saturday, October the 23rd, the day after this episode's gonna drop. They're holding it at noon at 1227 El Monte Boulevard in San Antonio. If you live in the area of San Antonio, I encourage you to go by and buy a plate. I know I will. If you'd like to know more on how you can help the family with funds, I'll leave information in the show note. It's a tragic story, but one that we've heard many, many times over and over again. The other sad part is, when I started doing this segment, I thought, well, you know, I'd have a couple stories a week that I probably could put in here. Especially any stories that help with getting the public involved. There's a guy that's on the loose that, you know, you can send his picture around, stuff like that. This week was kind of rough. There was a ton of more shootings, stabbings. I mean, I almost wish I could go a week without doing this segment at all because there was nothing to talk about. And domestic violence is one that's always hard. Not talking about it, though, doesn't help us either. Alright, I think we're good. Here we go, episode 11. Warning, this story depicts accounts of violence and adult themes that may be found disturbing and unsuitable for some. Listener discretion is advised. Police responded to a call from a teenage girl who claimed that she and someone else had been shot. The call came at 12:30 p.m. on Tuesday, September the 29th, 2015. When police arrived at the Northside apartment complex, known as Churchill Park, in the 1100 block of Patricia Drive, the suspect had fled the scene. The young girl was found downstairs in the apartment and had dried blood on her chest. Police then found the young male dead upstairs in a bedroom with a gunshot wound to the head. She attempted to give officers details while barely conscious and explained that a male, unknown to her, came in and shot the two of them. The then San Antonio Police Department Sergeant Javier Salazar said a man and a woman, both in their late teens, had been inside their residence when the shooting took place. But the incident did not appear to be a domestic dispute. The young woman was taken to University Hospital with life-threatening injuries, and the man died at the scene. A neighbor said the victims were a young couple who had moved in about a month and a half previous. Police searched for the gunman, but early on were unable to get a clear description of the suspect. The following day, the names of the two young souls lost were released. 18-year-old Joshua Scott Rodriguez and 17-year-old Victoria Yvonne Dennis. Unfortunately, Vic, as she was known by her close friends, succumbed to her injuries and passed the same day. The father of the 17-year-old Victoria Dennis was interviewed by several TV stations and said he hopes his daughter's killer was found soon. An extremely emotional Victor Dennis was pleading for the help to find his daughter's killer. I need to know who did it, Victor said. Police arrived at his door Tuesday afternoon to tell him the news. I came to the door and they told me my 17-year-old daughter was involved in a shooting at the Churchill Apartments a week before her 18th birthday. Her birthday, in fact, was only 10 days away when she lost her life. She was shot 4 times, twice in the back and twice in the chest, Victor went on. Joshua and Victoria were friends, but he never met the young man. All I do know is that my daughter was lying on the floor with 4 bullet holes, and she was able to call the police and able to tell the nurse to tell me she loved me before she died. Just please help me get this person caught. That's all I ask. I need to put my daughter to rest and she can rest in peace. That's it. I don't want to deal with this pain. I don't want to bury my daughter. She's supposed to bury me. I'm going to lay her little 5-foot casket into the ground. Victor said the last time he saw his daughter, Monday night, the last night before her death, she was excited about seeing the blood moon. 2 days later, he and Victoria's mother are planning her funeral. Dorothy Castro, Victoria's mom, said she has a birthday next week. She was going to be 18 years old. She didn't make it to 18. Dorothy said that starting in January, Victoria began traveling back and forth from Corpus Christi, where she lived with her mom, to San Antonio to visit her father. Recently, she had moved to San Antonio permanently. It's going to bring closure, but it's not going to bring my daughter back, Victor said. It will never bring my daughter back, but whoever did it doesn't need to do it to anybody else. The family offered a $1,000 reward for any information. Visitation for Victoria was held on her birthday, Friday, October the 9th, and she was laid to rest the next day at Seaside Memorial Park in Corpus Christi. On December the 2nd, 2015, a man who was already in jail on 2 charges was accused in the fatal shooting. Brian Flores, at the age of 33, was facing a charge of capital murder in the deaths of Joshua Rodriguez and Victoria Dennis. He was arrested on drug charges on November the 12th. Family members of Joshua Rodriguez told police that Joshua had been receiving threats via Facebook because he had allegedly made a sex tape involving a female. The woman denied there was a sex tape, saying it was only a photograph of the two of them, but her boyfriend did threaten Joshua. She then told police that her boyfriend would not have done it, but that he might have asked Flores to do it instead. She noted Flores was much older than her boyfriend and said he is capable of killing. Investigators discovered Facebook posts between Joshua and the woman's boyfriend indicating he and Flores were outside of Joshua's apartment and that Joshua was messing with death. According to reports, multiple sources told police that Flores admitted he killed both Joshua and Victoria. When police interviewed Brian Flores, he said that his friend Reps was dating a girl and that Joshua posted a sex tape or pictures of him and the girl on social media like he was bragging. He then denied being responsible for the deaths of the victims. Based on the evidence before them, it seems that Dennis was in the wrong place at the wrong time when she was shot. On April the 8th, 2016, 18-year-old Jesus Jose Lopez was taken into custody by task force officers after investigative efforts and extensive surveillance found Lopez leaving an apartment and getting into a vehicle in the 1300 block of San Luis Street on the west side of San Antonio. A warrant was issued for his arrest. When task force officers approached the vehicle, identified themselves, removed Lopez from the vehicle, and took him into custody without incident, according to the U.S. Marshals. Authorities said it was alleged that Lopez was involved in the capital murder. He was found unlawfully carrying a firearm and in possession of marijuana at the time of his arrest. After a thorough investigation by homicide detectives with the San Antonio Police Department, a warrant was issued for Lopez's arrest for his involvement in the deaths. This is a truly sad and unfortunate case because 3 lives have been lost. The lives of the 2 victims and the life of this young man, who may spend the rest of his life in prison, said Robert R. Almonte, U.S. Marshal for the Western District of Texas. Lopez was held in custody at the Bexar County Sheriff's Office on an $850,000 bond. It wasn't reported on exactly how Lopez was connected or if he was the guy named Reps that Brian Flores had referred to. On June 28, 2016, a woman whom was suspected of being involved in the fatal shooting that led to the deaths of Joshua and Victoria 9 months earlier was indicted on a charge of capital murder in the 187th District Court. Samantha Cruz, at the age of 27, was being held on an $800,000 bond. She had been recently released just 3 months before the murders after being sent to the Texas Department of Corrections for 2 years for violating the terms of her probation from a 2010 drug charge. It's not clear what involvement she had with Brian Flores or Jesus Jose Lopez or others unnamed publicly, but there was enough evidence to implicate her with an indictment by a grand jury a week before her arrest. The three suspects in the case face life in prison or death if convicted of capital murder. Not a month later, on July 16, 2016, 18-year-old Jesus Jose Lopez attempted to kill himself in the Bexar County jail cell. He was found hanging by a bedsheet, was cut down and taken to the hospital where he did later die. Lopez was the third inmate dead in 3 weeks at the Bexar County jail, and one more would follow 1 week later. All were found hanging by their bedsheets. Lopez's mother, Terry Lopez, said of her son, "He never cried in a visit. He was never like, 'I can't do this anymore,' or was sad or nothing. He was strong." Lopez's uncle, Larry Lozoya, believes his nephew's death isn't being taken seriously enough because of the charges he faced. "Isn't innocent until proven guilty? Because that's the law, right?" said Lozoya. "You're innocent until proven guilty. It don't matter what crime you do. It don't matter what crime. It doesn't make it right for the jail guards to let something happen like that, period." Lozoya claimed inmates are supposed to be checked on every 15 minutes. But according to Case at 12, who asked the sheriff's office and reported in the article, they said Lozoya was mistaken. Inmates are only required to be checked on once every hour. Lopez's death happened just days after state inspectors paid a surprise visit to the jail in response to the two previous inmate suicides. The first inmate killed himself on June the 28th, and the second hung himself in his maximum security unit on July the 9th. The sheriff's office had claimed to be a national model in its efforts to screen incoming inmates for mental illness and suicidal tendencies, but has also said that there is always room for improvement. Lopez's uncle, Lozoya, went on, "How could you say that? Somebody's life just got killed in there. If you're going to do your job, it wouldn't have happened." The following is a post regarding the death of her son by Terry Lopez on March the 10th, 2017. "I'm the mother of Jesus Jose Lopez, speaking out on his negligent, unjustly, uncalled for death, July 14, 2016. I received a call from the University Hospital at 12:03 p.m. Why it took so long, I have no idea, but when I arrived at the hospital, they told me, 'Your son will not speak no more.' He was unconscious for 30 minutes, then they came back to tell me 26 minutes. How do they know who was there? I have no idea. I have plenty of proof and pictures of this after the fact that they cleaned up the crime scene. JJ had bruises, scratches, he has no nails. He was found laying flat on the ground. Detective working my son's case did not remember. My son Sally was asleep at the time of JJ's incident, as it is in their report. Detective didn't know of any urine or defecation occurring at the scene, which was on the Bexar County medical report. Detective said JJ had no marks on him, which is a lie. JJ was the only one of three supposedly suicides in July to make it to the hospital because he was fighting back. The signs are there. I have pictures of his bruised right eye, scratches on his right eye, a dime-sized scab on his right upper arm, as well as a big bruise on his inner left knee. Yes, I have these pictures. It's too obvious." Detective said there was no blood, not one drop. I asked him, "Why doesn't this double knotted, perfectly cut noose not have any blood on it?" He replied, medical, I'm not sure what you're asking me why there isn't enough blood." Asked him again and he said, "Because there was no blood." I asked Detective Waits, why was there one boot print of blood outside in the hallway on the right side of the noose outside his cell? He never saw that because trustees cleaned it, but not in time to get that snapshot of the boot print of blood. I've called the FBI twice last year, once this year, no response and no callback, nothing. I've talked to Texas Ranger Freeman. He said he would need to hear it from an expert, like I'm no one and out of my mind. The deputy who found my son laying flat on the ground is on BCSO paid administrative leave as of July 29, 2016. This deputy had been in an altercation with a rookie co-worker and bit a chunk of his ear off. This is the deputy who found my son? He is gone. Why? Why? Detective throws away the evidence from my son's crime scene. Detective says my son was yelling, I'm going to hang myself with this towel. Why was he neglected, not given the correct protocol for his outcry, just ignored and bullied? This is a cry for help, and Bexar County administrators ignored my son's cry for help. They violated my son's civil and human rights as a U.S. citizen. The deputies bullied my son and put four incompatible inmates with him 4 days in a row. They didn't have any food. They were all older and not in any way being compatible with my 18-year-old son. One inmate, Wilson, was a psychopath and sent to the Texas State Hospital. I know this is jail, but this is enough crime behind those jail bars. Even the Texas Commissions of Jail Standards ignored my complaint when they told me November the 22nd, 2016, that they'd open an investigation. I did a follow-up call on January 4, 2017. They simply are not doing their job duties, first of all. The receptionist saying of her position is nothing, telling me all concerned about my knowledge of this hanging mechanism. It is a hanging mechanism. We could go round and round on this. Do they not see the Texas Jail Standards staff is not doing their job of overlooking these two holes in a 4-foot shelf, which the toothbrush doesn't even fit in this shelf, which is a hanging mechanism? These are the facts. And now DA Nicholas LaHood, as of the March 2017 news with WAI's April Molina, wants all the information on all the inmates' deaths. I just need answers and the true video of this corrupt institution. They want to say BCSO was a national model? Not. Terry Lopez. I read that word for word as much as I possibly could. From what I read, I think she's implying that her son was bullied into taking his life, and in fact given the means and opportunity to do so. It's not hard to, at the very least, consider that she might have a point on the grounds of negligence. I mean, there were 4 suicides in a month, and I wonder if they all use the same method. You know, the 4-foot shelf she referred to with the holes too big for a toothbrush, but which I believe her son used in his suicide when he tied up the noose. 9 months later, on December the 27th, 2017, Terry updated her post. Now I get to talk with Brandon Wood from the Texas Commission of Jail Standards in January of 2018. I haven't seen any updates since, and nothing reported further on the death of Jesus Jose Lopez. So I would assume they have closed their investigation and ruled his death a suicide, absent of any negligence. About 14 months after her arrest on August 26, 2017, the case against Samantha Cruz for capital murder was dismissed, stating further investigation and possibly to be a witness against Brian Flores in his capital murder trial. Brian Flores was finally set to go to trial after being found competent to stand trial in the summer of 2018. But in a rather unfortunate and unforeseen circumstance on July 5, 2018, Flores' defense sought the mistrial on the grounds that his lead defense attorney in this case, Ed Camara, at the age of 77, was not capable of effectively defending him after Camara suffered a concussion from a fall. On June the 20th, Camara blacked out in the shower due to a change in his blood pressure medication. He hit his head and he suffered a concussion. Prosecutors Jason Goss and Gretchen Flatter began jury selection weeks before with Flores' attorneys, Ed Camara and David Woodard. Jury selection was continued until June 25th, but according to court filings, when the trial resumed, Camara was unsteady and lightheaded. During jury selection, Camara felt nauseous and was worried he would collapse. Under the advice of his doctor, he went home when they broke for lunch. that left Woodard as the sole attorney. He asked for a continuance, which Judge Susan Reed rejected. And yes, it is the same Susan Reed who was the San Antonio District Attorney from 1998 to 2014. She pointed at two attorneys with the Texas Defender Service and said Flores had three attorneys, even though Woodard said he was not qualified to lead jury selection. Reed ordered him to proceed. In doing so, she basically was gift-wrapping an appeal if the trial continued. Cameron's doctor said he examined the attorney on July the 1st and that he had post-concussion syndrome. He couldn't walk a straight line and is a little slower and muted in his responses. In the July 5th hearing, Goss and Woodard argued before Judge Reed about Kamara's competency since the injury. Both questioned Cameron's doctor about his health and whether he can continue seating a jury, which in a death penalty case can take up to a month, as compared to one day to seat a panel for other cases. "I think you'd have difficulty making the case that he's competent," the doctor said under direct questioning by Goss. "Sometimes recovery time for concussions can be a matter of weeks, sometimes months. Most people 3 months." He did say that he felt Cameron could do some office work and sit at a desk, and he agreed with Goss that he more likely could continue picking a jury. But Woodard contended that the doctor had no idea what goes into jury selection. Goss asserted that Flores' attorneys were attempting to drag the case out with continuances. "He wants a continuance that takes us to the next district attorney administration," Goss told Reed. "Even with this break, we can still seat a jury in August. We can finish it, the trial that is, before September." As the doctor testified, this is a bump on the head. Goss also stressed that the state had subpoenaed over 100 witnesses, and that if proceedings halted, they would have to find them all over again. Woodard countered that the court should grant a mistrial because there's no telling when Cameron will be ready. "This is a 77-year-old man with a concussion. We're not talking about a small child or a teen," Woodard said. He also accused the state of rushing to put Flores, now 36 years old, to death, and without the attorney requirement for defendants facing execution. "Texas law holds lawyers representing capital murder defendants to a higher standard and gives specific experience requirements for the first and second chair attorneys." "We need to take our time," Woodard said. "Flores only has one attorney." Reed acknowledged that four jurors had already been seated, but said she would order them to be released. "If we want to call it a mistrial, that'll be what it's called. Mr. Cameron is removed, another attorney will be appointed," she said. In the end, Judge Susan Reed did the right thing, albeit reluctantly. She granted the mistrial in the death penalty case for Brian Flores. It doesn't matter if the mistrial pushes a new trial into the administration of the next district attorney, as prosecutor Jason Goss argued at the hearing. By going forward with the jury selection when Flores' lead attorney, Ed Cameron, was out with a concussion, Reed set up what would have been an unusually strong appeal for someone charged with murdering two teenagers. It also doesn't matter that the attorneys with the Texas Defender Services, a nonprofit focused on death penalty cases, were assisting Flores' counsel in the case. Bexar County did not appoint the Texas Defender Services to represent Flores. The county is not paying attorneys with the nonprofit. The county appointed Camara as a lead counsel and David Woodard as second chair. Those are his attorneys, regardless of outside assistance. State law requires two appointed attorneys in death penalty cases, including a qualified lead. Not only this, but standards for the State Bar of Texas and the American Bar Association call for two attorneys. A second chair is not a fill-in for the lead. A second chair is a qualified attorney, but is also learning from the lead. With Camara out with a concussion during jury selection, Flores only had one attorney, the second chair. And that's not enough, which is why Reed had to grant the mistrial. From the bench, Reed acknowledged the scrutiny that is given to capital murder cases and the Texas statute that requires first chair designation. But she seemed more concerned about the requirement of having two attorneys since Texas Defender Services were assisting with the case. "I think the legislature needs to take another look at that based on Texas Defender Service, who was essentially working with you, and I think it would be disingenuous to say they are not, because they are." "I can understand what Judge Reed is talking about. The attorneys that work for Texas Defender Service are absolutely qualified, but it's not about the qualification here that matters. It's about what would happen on appeal, whereas Texas Defender Service were helping with the jury selection, technically in the eyes of the law, Flores would have only had one attorney and not even a lead attorney at that time. And it would have made for an absolute strong appeal. Don Flannery, president of the San Antonio Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, was quoted on Reed's initial actions. He said the actions violated Flores' Sixth Amendment rights to effective counsel. Not only are the rights of Flores at hand, but what about the victims and their families? Let's say this guy is guilty, said Flannery. This would have caused an error, and an error that would have meant a potential reversal. But a mistrial during jury selection only means a do-over, which is a hassle, but not an injustice. On August 8, 2018, State District Judge Joey Contreras in the 187th State District Court appointed new attorney John Fall and reinstated a no longer injured Ed Camara to go along with David Woodard for the defense, stating that the case had been delayed for far too long and that they need to proceed. Prosecutors Goss and Flatter argued Wednesday that they are ready to go to trial in September, but Woodard told the judge they need more time because new appointed attorney Fall needs to get to know their client and get up to speed on the case. Judge Contreras set a hearing for a week later on August 15 to reconvene with all the attorneys to discuss going to trial in October. But that trial would never come to happen, because on July 10, 2019, Brian Flores, as part of his plea agreement, was sentenced by Judge Stephanie Boyd to life in prison without the possibility of parole for his role in the shooting deaths of Joshua Rodriguez and Victoria Dennis. Flores cried as family members said their final words to him before he was sentenced in the 187th State District Court. He took the plea for the life sentence rather than go to trial and the chance of getting the death penalty. He would later say that he killed Joshua at the request of a friend and shot Victoria because he didn't want to leave a witness. As part of the guilty plea, the families were allowed to give a victim impact statement. Victoria's mother, Dorothy Castro, looked at Flores and said, "I don't know how I can forgive you. Sorry. I am a Christian woman, and God says I have to forgive you. So now I forgive you halfway, but not fully, because I don't know how to." She told Flores her daughter will never be in peace because she wasn't ready to die. "I believe karma, and the good Lord will give you your remaining justice. All those actions you have done will be your judgment day," she said as her voice broke. Following the hearing, District Attorney Joel Gonzalez called Flores the worst of the worst, noting that he has extensive criminal history of violence and drug offenses. "This individual is a menace to society, but this individual will never become a menace on the streets of Bexar County again or anywhere because he will die in prison. We resolved this case in such a way that this individual will spend the rest of his life in prison," noting that the family's victims were in agreement. "He will take his last breath in prison." As part of the plea, prosecutor Gretchen Flatter said 10 cases being against Flores, including felony charges of burglary, aggravated robbery, and misdemeanor assault for family violence, would be dismissed, stating there was no need to go forward because Flores would spend the rest of his life in prison. It seems as though the more I dug into this case, I just kept finding more and more information. The material witnesses that were going to be used in this trial, I found had criminal cases against them in the years since the case, but their names were not made public in the media, so I'll take caution in naming them myself. I can't fathom killing someone over alleged sex tape that wasn't even my spouse or partner, as Brian Flores did. He took the lives of these two people who had barely had a chance to live, and were looking forward to their what was really the beginning of their lives. At 18, I can't imagine half of us did anything yet. I know I didn't. As I like to do, I'm going to end with a small remembrance. Joshua Scott Rodriguez was born on May the 20th, 1997, in Santa Ana, California, to Blanca Ruiz and Gustavo Rodriguez. He survived by his siblings, Lizeth, Alexis, Crystal, Clarissa, and his son, Joshua Isaiah Rodriguez. his grandparents, as well as numerous uncles, aunts, cousins, and two nieces. Joshua was loved and will be greatly missed. A friend posted that Josh was a very kind person and always had a smile. He was never angry, and that he would be deeply missed. Victoria Yvonne Dennis was born on October the 9th, 1997, to Dorothy Ann Castro and Victor Damone Dennis. The last school she attended was Richard King High School in Corpus Christi. Victoria was a devoted Christian and involved in the church and community. She is best known for her singing in the church choir. Victoria will always be remembered for her sense of humor, laughter, singing, and love for fashion and the beauty industry. She was a very loving sister, aunt, niece, cousin, and friend. Victoria's life may have been cut short, but she undoubtedly had an everlasting effect on those who loved her most. And that's our story. I hope you choose to take today to be grateful for what you have. We aren't guaranteed tomorrow after all. If you're a fan of the show, show your love with a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts to help us grow. Let me know your thoughts at True Crime San Antonio on Instagram. Love to hear from you. This has been True Crime San Antonio, and I am just another San Antonio native hoping to see us through. Take care.